And now to call us to worship this morning, words by Kenneth R. Warren. May we come into this building hallowed by generations of thoughtful worship. May we come into the company of this congregation, enlightened by reason and moved by concern. May we come with open minds and warm hearts. May we here cultivate a confidence that human intelligence and human affection can temper and ultimately overcome cruel circumstance and misguided malice with faith in the power of good over evil. So may we find both our social responsibilities and our individual salvation. Our chalice lighting words are from Albert Thielander. We hallow this time together by kindling the lamp of our heritage. So, good morning, everyone. One of the greatest joys in Unitarian Universalist churches, one of the greatest joys for me as a UU minister, is getting to welcome new children into our faith. And today we're holding a child dedication for Halia Irene Fitzer. A child dedication service is similar to a baptism in that we name the child in this service. But it's different in that we are not choosing a faith for the child or declaring that they are saved or asking that they are raised according to a set of creeds. Rather, we're welcoming them into our church. We're dedicating ourselves to helping a child learn and grow and declaring our wishes for them to be raised with principles of love and learning. And so at this time, Michelle and I are going to come down, and I'm going to invite Mike and Caitlin, along with their daughter, to come and join us now. Other voices before us have sung of justice and peace. Now it is our turn to sing to our children. Today we have gathered to dedicate ourselves to the life of Halia Irene Fitzer. May she hear only songs from our lips, haunting songs of hope, tender songs of love, compelling songs of justice and peace, poetic songs of mystery and wonder, noble songs of reason and truth. May she learn harmony from our lives. Before we continue, choir, I feel like you can't see very well here. Do you want to come out and sit? Like, I know you love Mike and Caitlin a lot.
I'd like to share a reading today from the Prophet by Khalil Gibran with the parents, relatives, and all those who are gathered here in witness. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life longings for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls. For their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you, for life goes not backward nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children as living arrows are sent forth. The archer seeks the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might, that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness, for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he loves also the bow that is stable.
Caitlin and Mike, to you as parents, let me say this. In presenting your child at this service, you invite all of us to share some joy and some responsibility that is yours as parents. You seek our support and your dedication to the task of fostering, with love and guidance, the fullest unfolding of the personality of your child. Your task, of course, will not always be an easy one. The time may come when you will be called upon to sacrifice ambitions, deny yourself pleasure, or set aside your own dreams so that your child may tread more surely onward in the path of life. But you accept this service to another life, knowing that your own lives will be fuller and richer in consequence. Do you now promise that, to the best of your human abilities, you will help this child to an appreciation of truth, beauty, kindness, justice, and love? Please say, we do.
We do.
And now I'd like to invite the godparents, grandparents, and the aunts and uncles to come forward at this time. To the godparents, Nandi Bino and Matthew Williams, to you let me say this. An old Jewish proverb says, in times of travail, go to the friend of your father, go to the friend of your mother. From this ancient wisdom comes the idea of godparents, or special people who dedicate themselves to watching out for the welfare of others' children. It is a noble and loving tradition to which you commit yourself this day. In our complex world, it is not possible for even the most loving and capable parents to raise a child alone. If our children are to become loving and independent adults, they need wisdom and counsel, love and support of many friends. You have been asked by the parents of this child to accept a special honor and responsibility. Do you then, to the best of your abilities, intend to supplement the care and love of these parents, both in the day-to-day development of this child and especially in the events of extraordinary need? If so, please say, we do. Thank you. May this commitment ennoble and enrich your lives. And to our family, grandparents and aunt, we also invoke into this circle of blessing Mike and Caitlin's parents who have passed, Mia and Kirk. They too are part of this cloud of witness that surrounds this family in love today. So you who are members of this child's family have been blessed by her birth. Yet this birth also confers on you a serious obligation. Will you promise now to lead this child by your own example so that she may learn the difference between right and wrong? And will you promise to befriend and be concerned for this child according to her own spiritual needs? If so, please say, we do. These bright faces are our future and our hope.
These reaching minds are our vision and our dream.
We lift ourselves
to their learning, to listen and to challenge, and to help them open new doors into the realms of the possible. These unclouded eyes bear witness to our present. We all believe, we all are.
We lift ourselves
to be worthy of that witness, providing a home we are proud to share.
These strong and tender young people are our growth and our becoming.
Much to learn from them, to love them, and to build with them a community that will bring truth and hope and courage to a new world that's always made anew.
Halia Irene Fitzer, today we welcome you to our congregation. As you grow, you are welcome here. You may work and play with the children here and learn from them too. On behalf of the children and youth of FPC, I welcome you into our church family.
The water that we use in a dedication service is an ancient symbol, a sign of our common heritage. I've dipped this rose in just a little bit of kind of coldish water. Halia, as you grow, you are welcome here. This water we use is an ancient symbol, a sign of our common heritage. As the source of life, the purifier, and the refresher, water symbolizes the endless cycle of generation and the mystery of birth. The rose that we present is an ancient symbol of beauty, a sign of the unfolding of new life, and of the divine image within each of us. And the power to grant a name is one of the greatest moments of human life. Yes, by bestowing a name, the act of naming, we bestow identity. We confirm the uniqueness of each person. What name do you give this child? Halia Irene Fitzer. We name you, and we dedicate you in the name of truth, in the promise of love, and in the fellowship of life. All right. Give you back. I'm going to give her. We give you this flower. There you go. This flower symbolizes the promise and the beauty of life. We cannot open the bud into blossom, but we can give it to the nurture. We can give it the nurture that will enable it to unfold. No flower grows alone, apart from the sunshine and rain, apart from the soil in which it lives, and so too, no child grows alone. May the flower then be a reminder of the beauty of fulfillment and of the reward which comes from love and understanding, from teaching and example. And may this budding flower be the unfolding life before you, be as the unfolding life before you, full of glory, peace, and grace, and with very few thorns. So these boats were made in the past by a beloved former member, Bob Selling. And today we start a new era, as this boat was made for you today by Don Rising, representing the love of this congregation. Talia Irene Fitzer, your life will be a great adventure. As a symbol of our well wishes for smooth sailing, we present you with this little boat. May you ride on the crest of the waves, both in rough seas and calm water. And if time become difficult, remember that this boat was built by the members of this church, and we stand ready to help you sail it, even through stormy times. And I'm going to take her back again. There we go. You can see Mom and Dad? Yeah? All right.
And the fire.
And now we bless you, Halia Irene Fitzer, with this ancient Irish blessing. May the blessing of the light be with you always, light without and light within. May the sun shine upon you and warm your heart until it glows like a great fire, so that others may feel the warmth of it. And may the light of your eyes shine like two candles at the window of night. Two candles, yes. Bidding the wanderer to come out of the dark and the cold. And may there be blessings of rain upon you, the sweet and tender rain. May it fall upon your spirit as with flowers that spring up and when fragrance fills the air. And may the blessings of the great rain wash you, clean you, and make you feel strong and more beautiful. And when the rains are over, may there be great pools of water, made beautiful by the radiance of your life, as when a star shines, beautiful in the night, painting the way for all of us. Okay, we're done. There you go. We have dedicated Halia Irene Fitzer. May we also dedicate ourselves this day. May this occasion work its miracle in our hearts, that we may mold our lives more and more in accordance with the beauty, truth, goodness, and love that we wish for the life of Halia Irene Fitzer. Some words of prayer or meditation this day from Mark Bellatini. Let my body remember. Let my hands and my feet remember. Let my breath remember those who have come before us, those who have come before me. Didn't Muhammad wake quietly in his cave? And didn't Jesus sigh silently by the blue lake? And Guan Yin, didn't she sit in silence thinking about what to do before doing it? And what was Siddhartha, the Buddha, doing anyway under that tree, if not just sitting quietly? And Susan B. Anthony, didn't she push back from her desk and take a breath now and then? And Florence Nightingale, didn't she put down her nurse's hat and think silently about what to write in her essay on mysticism
before she actually wrote it. And Sophia Faz, didn't she stop telling stories sometimes and just sit there? And didn't Black Elk just notice the sunlight glancing off his chair sometimes? And Starhawk, doesn't she too keep silence? Let us remember them all, our spiritual ancestors, with our bodies. Let us remember them with the silence that they too knew. Blessed be, and amen. We are our ancestors dreaming. In both the Hebrew and Christian scriptures, there are places where the text recites our lineage, our ancestry. In the Hebrew scriptures, we sometimes call them the begats. So, for example, the first book of Chronicles is nearly all genealogical lists. First book of Chronicles, chapter 3, verses 1 through 8. Now, these were the sons of David, to which were born unto him in Hebron the firstborn Amnon of Hinoam the Jezreelitess, the second Daniel of Abigail the Carmelitess, the third Absalom the son of Machach, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur, the fourth Adonijah the son of Haggith, the fifth Shephathiah of Abital, the sixth Ithream by Eglah his wife. These six were born into him in Hebron, and there he resigned 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem, he reigned 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years. And these were born into him in Jerusalem, Shemaiah and Shobab and Nathan and Solomon, four of Bathshua, the daughter of Amiel. Ibhar also, and Elishama, and Ephelet, and Nogag, and Nepheb, and Japhiah, and Elishama, and Eliada, and Ephelet, nine. These were all the sons of David, besides the sons of their concubines, and Tamar, their sister. That's just David's sons. Just David's sons right there. And in the New Testament, they do the same things in the Christian scriptures of reciting the lineage of David so that we can establish that Jesus is of that same house there of David. We do the same things in our own families. My family, like many others, has a family Bible into which the names of each generation is written. And then we are our grandparents' dreamings. It's been handed down, this family Bible, father to son, along the patriarchal line for several generations, but my father, having no sons, will give it to me. We do a not dissimilar thing in Unitarian Universalism. We lift up the names of venerated forefathers and foremothers in Unitarian Universalist history. Say, oh, Ralph Waldo Emerson was a Unitarian. Nathaniel Hawthorne, he was a Unitarian. Susan B. Anthony, she was a Unitarian. Sometimes we even claim Thomas Jefferson, even though he wasn't really a Unitarian. There's a lot to honor and to lift up in the history of Unitarian Universalism. We were on the cutting edge of all sorts of social movements, but most notably suffrage and abolition, but also more recently LGBT rights and civil rights and women's rights. But what do we do with the more complicated parts of our history? Not everyone was on the right side of history, as we put it. And even those who did some wonderful things were complicated figures that didn't do everything right. I've talked with you before about my own complicated history, handed down by my great-great-great-grandfather, Jephthah Landrum, who was a lieutenant in Georgia's Fayette and Jackson County militias and was the commander of a military expedition responsible for driving the Creek and Black Hawk Indians out of Fayette County, Georgia. And as a reward for that military service, he was given land that he turned into plantation, and by 1860 had 13 slaves. Some of their names, not all of their names, some of their names are recorded in the Landrum Family Bible too, probably the ones that were family. Some of them are buried in graves with simple unmarked tombstones in the family graveyard. In our faith too, we have skeletons in our closet. There's a hidden history, too, of churches that didn't stand up against slavery, people who didn't stand up for women's rights, homophobia, and anti-Semitism. For example, the Memphis Unitarian minister James Madison Barr said in March 1965 about the march in Selma, "We did not support the march in any way. I plan to oppose the present Martin Luther King Southern Christian Leadership Conference and such similar organizations, which are breeding a new reconstruction and are doing more damage to the Brotherhood than anything I can think of." Ralph Waldo Emerson said that he had many women friends among his acquaintance who didn't believe in women's rights when talking to noted suffragist and universalist minister Olympia Brown. Unitarian minister and noted abolitionist Theodore Parker was not so enlightened on the subject of the Irish, saying, "Certainly it would take time, all this time, to clean up a Paddy on the outside, and to clean him inwardly would be like picking all the sands of the Sahara." Unitarian forefather William Ellery Channing used the words arrogance and of self-interest and the idiocy of closeness to describe Jewish people. Unitarian Universalist author Kurt Vonnegut said, "Educating a beautiful woman is like pouring honey into a fine Swiss watch. Everything stops." It's poetic, poetic sexism, isn't it? And Unitarian educator Bronson Alcott, father of Louisa May Alcott, said, "Men are all thought and women are all sentiment." There are many, many, many stories we could tell about our spiritual ancestors. Mark Morrison Reed's, the Reverend Mark Morrison Reed's book, Darkening the Doorways, tells the story of African-American ministers in Unitarian Universalism and some of our racist responses and lack of responses to their emerging leadership, how we failed time and again to support African-American ministers. In an article in the UU World a couple of years ago, he writes, "In 1887, John Bird Wilkins founded the People's Temple Church, colored Unitarian, in Chicago. It lasted about a year. In 1892, Joseph Jordan founded a Universalist congregation in Norfolk, Virginia. Thomas Wise founded others in Suffolk and Ocean View, Virginia, in 1894 and 1902. Egbert Ethelred Brown started a Unitarian congregation in Jamaica in 1908 before moving to Harlem in 1920, where he founded the Harlem Community Church. The AUA provided sporadic financial support and then took away his ministerial fellowship in 1929. Can you imagine, he writes, can you imagine how we would be enriched today if there was a vibrant UU congregation in Harlem that had been around for almost 100 years? Wow. He writes, "In 1932, William H.G. Carter founded a church in Cincinnati, but the white ministers in the area did not tell the AUA of its existence. In 1947, Louis McGee was among those who founded the Free Religious Fellowship in Chicago. Today, it is only a remnant. None of the other congregations survived." We are our grandfather's dreamings. As a largely white denomination, and as a liberal faith, we too often get mired in guilt. We can easily feel guilty and not go anywhere from that stuck place of not having lived up to our dreamings, our grandparents' dreamings, our own dreamings. But feeling guilty is not all that helpful. On the other hand, I think it is helpful to acknowledge our ancestry, to acknowledge my family's heritage, and understand that my ancestors are a part of me, the good and the bad. And we need to do that with our spiritual ancestors as well. I have a friend who is the child of German immigrants. I once asked her about their relationship to the Holocaust. Had her family been involved? Did they carry feelings of guilt? And she said to me quietly, "My Gentile parents named their children Miriam and David. What do you think?" And then she explained to me the great cultural guilt that the German people felt at that time, even if their families weren't involved, of the Holocaust. There's a deep knowing as a culture that they were responsible for this only a generation or two ago. It's not their great-great-grandfathers. It's their grandfathers of the people my age. Here in the U.S., we lack that deep knowing of our ancestors and the heritage we bring from them. But we can learn. Do you remember the first time you learned about the Holocaust, about slavery, about the Trail of Tears? Do you remember the first time you understood deep in your bones humankind's inhumanity to humankind, and that we are all the inheritors of that, good and bad alike, as well as the glorious history of rising up for freedom and democracy that we also share? This is what we mean when we talk about universalism in Unitarian Universalism. This is what we mean when we talk about our first principle of the inherent worth and dignity of all people, or when we talk about All Souls Day every fall. We mean our wonderful, spiritual, enlightened ancestors that we love to raise up, and we remember those that we don't, that they too are our ancestry as a people of faith, and in many cases, like my own, individually. What makes it possible to bear this is the lifting up of those wonderful stories, too. But that means doing so in a way that is not without complicating things. We can't lift up Thomas Jefferson without acknowledging Thomas Jefferson owned slaves, raped women. We have to put both of these parts of our heritage forward together. There were people who did things that were amazing, created amazing works of art, things of great beauty, great minds and great thinkers who also gave us the loftiest of ideals and never lived up to them. It's okay that we lift up the positive while at the same time we must lift up the negative. I personally believe that my ancestors are part of who I am. I am connected to them. And that means my spiritual ancestors too. When I look at this church, I think of our religious ancestors, our foremothers, forefathers, foreparents of faith, how they built this church, and how we continue to benefit from its legacy. I'm sure some of them were good, and some of them were bad, and all of them were complicated. Maybe some of them didn't take a stand against slavery or even were implicated in the institution of slavery. Maybe they were connected here in Stowe, too, to the driving of Native Americans off this land. This land, this very land on which we stand and sit. In terms of our work going forward, this is the most important step that we must take in building true bridges and working with other communities for justice. For example, when asked recently what other congregations could do in the wake of anti-Semitic incidents in Acton to support our local Jewish community and their congregation, Rabbi Mike Rothbaum wrote this on Facebook. He said, "To be blunt, churches can talk about the role Christian texts play in anti-Semitic attitudes and acts. Just like white Jews need to own our responsibility for anti-black racism, Christians need to own their role in anti-Semitism." We're both a Christian and a non-Christian church, depending on who you ask and the moment and your definition. But the point is clear. In order to be an ally, we need to own our history. both the good and the bad. That's why we've been doing things like holding classes on what it means to be a white person in a racist world this fall, and why we need to keep doing work like that. We inherited an imperfect world, and we inherited an imperfect faith. There is so much to celebrate, and there is so much hope to be found, but there is also that which we need to own and to name in order to move forward. So let us go forward, holding up our heritage, which we can be proud of, claiming the good work that we've done through our history, and also owning our more complicated religious past as well. Because by doing that, by owning all of it in its complexity, we are our grandparents' dreamings, and the work and the possibility of true healing and justice begins. May it be so.